The way we accept suffering and handle struggle shapes who we are. My guest, Dr. Jan Laifman, was a victim of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. The overwhelming odds of survival that he and his family faced were unfathomable. Yet within that crucible of struggle, their determination to overcome was molded. And like so many others, Dr. Laifman found himself an immigrant in Brooklyn, New York. When the COVID-19 pandemic wreaked havoc on his newfound home, he couldn't just stand back and watch. As part of the global COVID-19 task force, he was recognized as a City of Manhattan hero for his community service and research contributions during the crisis. I'm really excited to speak with him today. This is Medicine Beyond the Science. On the 26th of April, 1986, the Chernobyl nuclear disaster took place within the Soviet Union in Ukraine. While the initial fatalities were around 100 lives lost, the projected deaths from long-term health effects is a topic of debate, with the numbers ranging from 4,000 up to 16,000 lives lost for those exposed across the entire continent of Europe. On the border of Chernobyl is Belarus, and it is there that our guest, Dr. Jan Laifman, was born, exposed, and became a survivor of the worst nuclear disaster in history. Now, Jan, I've known you for around a decade, but felt that it was a tough topic to bring up in conversation. So I just want to thank you for coming onto the podcast. And I just want you to tell us a little bit about your childhood as a Chernobyl survivor.
Thank you so much for having me, Jake. I really, really appreciate it. I am one of the few survivors of the after effects of Chernobyl, from the largest hospital in the Soviet Union. Growing up in this area, radiation was everywhere. Although I was asymptomatic initially, I began to experience widespread symptoms by the age of 2, including diffuse lymphadenopathy, weeping wounds, and cysts covering my whole body. I went from clinic to clinic and hospital to hospital with no one being able to diagnose, much less treat me. In the largest and most advanced hospital in the Soviet Union, I was the interesting patient, with doctors coming from all over the country to look at me, but none could diagnose nor offer me respite. Eventually, I was put on palliative care, with my condition retrograding by the day. I remember those feelings of helplessness, like it was yesterday. But my parents were there for me, and they inspired me to never give up. I'm alive today because of them. I'm alive because they connected me with life-saving care abroad. The medical staff's warm and proficient care not only saved me, but led me to find purpose and an appreciation for internal medicine that has continued to resonate throughout my medical training. I was the child who was never supposed to make it, but did. I'll never forget what it's like to be a patient. I'm grateful to be alive, and I live every single day like it's my last. And that is why I started to do research at the age of 15 as a means to give back, until one day when I can become a licensed physician and have the same positive impact on the lives of my patients as the physicians who saved me.
Jan, it's crazy to think about that. I look at you, and we've met on multiple occasions, and you look totally healthy to me. You look fine. And yet what you're telling me is that you had these horrific effects from the nuclear radiation and from this horrible accident. And I have to ask, I guess I never did ask you, but like, are you the only child in your family?
Yes. So,
your parents, literally, they have one child. They're out there in Eastern Europe. It's tough times. It's the late 80s. This is during the time where the Soviet Union is going through an absolute upheaval. We have different political reforms. I mean, some people claim that Chernobyl was one of the factors, not the main factor, but the straw that broke the camel's back for the Soviet Union. I mean, it just caused chaos. I mean, even if you look around in Europe, Women were so scared to even be pregnant. People in Denmark and in Italy, there was an increase in abortions that were going on there too, because people were just afraid. I could not imagine the fear that your parents had, because they have their only child and you're there. And the doctors say you just said an interesting case. The fear that comes through your mind. I am a parent. I have children. You don't want your child to be the interesting medical case. You want your child to be healthy. And yet you're saying that you had open wounds, you had cysts. Did the doctors ever find out exactly what was wrong? Or, I mean, how do you treat that? How do you fix that type of nuclear radiation poisoning?
Exactly. That you hit the nail right on the head. So because of the situation and the circumstances, my parents were scared to have more children. One child and was enough, and we didn't know, they didn't know if I would even make it. And so they invested everything they had into me. I'm honestly blessed to be alive, and that's why I said I live every day like it's my last. And I feel like I have an obligation, because I survived, to give back.
Now, where did you get your medical treatment done? Was it there in Belarus, or did they have to go somewhere else?
So I was fortunate that my grandparents, they moved abroad when I was about 1 year old. And I began to become symptomatic at about age two. Initially, my mom did not want to bother my grandparents. But then when my condition began to decline, and essentially I was weeks from dying, she had no choice. She called them, explained the whole story, and all the life savings that they had, they sent to my mom so that I can be taken abroad and receive treatment. And that's the only reason why I'm alive today. Thankfully, I made a full recovery there. And then I came back to the Soviet Union, and I got sick again.
Wow. So you got sick again. So you literally get treatment. Things are looking good. They bring their son back to the Soviet Union, and it goes back to worse.
Right. And that's when my parents began to think and say that we need to get out of here if I would survive. This was not without some upheaval. Obviously, a lot of individuals in my town were being affected by Chernobyl in various ways. And everyone was leaving. And when you are living in a country, in a communist country, one wants for things to be very smooth. Yeah. And so there was some resistance, but thankfully, my parents were great advocates for me. And because of my declining health, we were allowed to leave.
Now, did anybody else experience health effects from, like, in your family, like your immediate family? Did anybody else experience health effects from the Chernobyl disaster, or was it just you, the child?
Chernobyl continues to be a dark cloud across everyone who's a survivor, not just me or my parents. Wow. More than a decade after we immigrated, my mom sadly was diagnosed with cancer. And that was very difficult for all of us. Thankfully, my mom made a full recovery. But to this day,
we are still struggling. You're still going through this. It's not like in the past. It still comes up from time to time.
It still comes up, and Chernobyl, like a dark cloud, sometimes rears its ugly head with me, with my mom, with my dad. There are things that are difficult to explain, and it's something that I need to live with. And that's why I said I live every day like it's my last, because I never know what's going to happen tomorrow. But I want to know that I did everything that I could in the time that I had left on this planet.
You seize the day. And, you know, so now countless sacrifice, you're saying. You leave the Soviet Union, you come to the United States. And, you know, we first met in New York, and it's true that the city, it's the melting pot of the entire world.
Every nation is represented in the boroughs, Queens, Brooklyn, Staten Island, Manhattan, everybody. And immigrants, they're just the backbone of that New York culture. And even though you have neighbors who are immigrants just like yourself, it doesn't make it any less difficult to try to find your identity in America. And, you know, what was it like for you and your family? You leave Eastern Europe very, very different. And now it's early 1990s, United States, and now you have to assimilate. And I just want to ask, like, you know, what's the one specific challenge that you had to face coming into this culture?
So I have to say, from the onset, it's not easy being an immigrant and building a foundation for the future. Immigration poses many challenges. It forced my parents to forgo their education, work long and hard hours to perform odd jobs with no days off, while I attempted to assimilate to my new life. I'll never forget how hard my parents worked. They worked 12 hours each day, and they'd come home tired, exhausted, yet they still made time to help me with my homework. I'll never forget their sacrifices, not only for me, but for a family at large. And that's one of the many factors that has continued to motivate me daily to persevere. Their sacrifices taught me resiliency, an appreciation for hard work, and they shaped me into the caring individual that I am today. And so with that in mind, when I look at patients, I never forget what it's like when I was a patient. And I never forget the sacrifices that my parents made for me. And so I will always be there for them, because I was born under the mantra, all for one and one for all.
Speaking of that, and just the human elements and who we are as people, a person that, you know, really has had tremendous impact on me was the Nobel laureate Elie Wiesel. And he was a Romanian Jew who survived the horrors of the Holocaust in Auschwitz. And when I was about, oh, I don't know, 10 years old, I read his book Night, and it recounts his story. And quite frankly, it terrified me to think that people were like this. And not that long ago that people had experienced this in Eastern Europe and the Jewish people, what they went through. And yet there was something that he said that left a lasting impression on me. And he said that even in the darkness, it is possible to create light. And Jan, you've lived a life where you were a victim. And we've heard all of this, but your parents were victims of it too. But you're choosing now to be a victor. You're creating light right now, what is a very dark period for the 21st century with this COVID pandemic. And I've looked up some of the achievements that you've done with this, and it's really remarkable in 2020. And I want to thank you for what you did, because in 2020, you were recognized by New York State and the city of Manhattan as a hero for your community service and for your research contributions during this pandemic. And as a fellow New Yorker, I thank you for what you've done for our people there. And Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, they've also recognized you for your research excellence and the work that you were doing on that COVID, global COVID task force day. And what you're trying to do again is to bring light into a dark situation. You pushed forward with all of that, and you didn't let that hinder you. I just want to say, you know, how had you being a survivor of Chernobyl influenced your response during this pandemic? And, you know, talk to me a little bit more about, you know, I talked a little bit about your immunology work that you were doing on the global task force, but tell us a little bit more about that groundbreaking research that you're that your team is producing.
So when the COVID-19 pandemic struck the United States, I felt powerless, having to watch as many of my neighbors, family members, friends, and colleagues were on the front lines, with many falling ill, one by one by one, like dominoes. As one of the sole Chernobyl survivors from the after effects, this seemed like deja vu all over again. I'll never forget the memories of long hospital stays that included painful cries of adolescents begging for relief from the side effects of radiation exposure. Hospitals were unequipped to handle the influx of patients and physicians ill-prepared to manage this medical catastrophe. I made a promise to myself that if I ever survived, I would do my best to never allow another pandemic like this to occur under my watch. And so I wanted to take the lessons of Chernobyl and be a vehicle of change and strength. So after the pandemic struck, I was recruited to join the Global COVID-19 Task Force to serve as a special advisor for immunology, oncology, and cellular therapeutics initially. And in a very short time, I was given a unique opportunity to become the director of the immunology division, if I could lead an international team of MDs, PhDs, and MD-PhDs to further investigate the mechanisms involved in COVID-19 in a very short time period. Despite the tall order, I rapidly galvanized our respective expertise, and within weeks, we proposed one of the first cohesive mechanisms of action for SARS-CoV-2 that is still valid today. We also were amongst the first to explain and demonstrate the mechanism behind the interplay between COVID and the flu, which we termed as COVID flu. Our team was amongst the first in the world to explain the efficacy of a promising therapy against severe COVID-19, and were proven correct when one of the companies within that space demonstrated promising clinical trial data and received US FDA Fast Track designation on December 1st, 2020, a week before the vaccines. Despite being just a medical student at that time, I'm extremely proud of what we collectively were able to accomplish. Now in June of 2021, I'm honored to have presented the next chapter of this at the 2021 American Society of Clinical Oncology meeting. I presented one of the first mechanisms in the literature showcasing the interplay between cancer and COVID-19 with support from clinical data and a promising therapeutic intervention that can offer respite to this vulnerable patient population.
Well, hold on. So you mean to tell me that there's a connection of some sort between COVID-19 and cancer?
Exactly. We were amongst the first in the world to demonstrate this. And it's an interplay. So using the mechanism that we presented from our publication in Shock, there is a connection. But because this work has not been published as of yet, I can't fully go into the details out of respect for our team.
But there is some sort of a connection between cancer and COVID-19. That's really, really insane. Wow. I'm actually looking forward to that publication when it comes out. I really am. And you know, Jan, it was really hard because my wife and I, we're New Yorkers, and yet there we were on the West Coast during COVID, and the entire world was going through this pandemic. I mean, we still are. But yet we felt so helpless because New York was just getting so ravaged by this. And I knew you were there. And I remember messaging you late in the night. I said, Jan, please, please be careful out there. It's so rough. What's going on with this? I just hope you guys are being safe. The city is just getting crazy right now. I couldn't imagine being there. And I remember you just sending me motivational things and you're going, hey, we're all going to pull through this together. The whole world is going through this. But if we keep our cool and we stay calm, we're going to get through this all together. And that was really inspiring to me. That really was. And I do consider you, the fact that you can lead an international team, work with people to be able to do this, that's an inspiring thing, Jan. But more importantly, I guess I have to ask you, who inspires you?
So there's an old saying, it takes a village to raise a doctor. As such, I'm inspired by multiple individuals. First and foremost, I'm inspired by my parents for their continuous sacrifices for me so that I could pursue my dreams of becoming a physician. I am forever grateful for all that they have done and continue to do for me. Next, I'm grateful to several physicians who had taken me under their wing in various stages of my career development and mentored me. Additionally, most of them were immigrants like myself who had achieved success and contributed to pioneering medical research. Dr. Bochkina, she mentored me ever since I matriculated to Stony Brook University. She took me under her wing, challenged me, and helped me to find my passion in research. Dr. Sadeline from Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center an international leader and one of the fathers of CAR T-cell therapy. I'm very grateful that he believed in me and empowered me to achieve success. He saw potential in me from the moment that we met, cultivated it, and opened my mind to translational medicine and immunology and immunotherapeutics. I'm grateful for the solid foundation that I was able to achieve during my time in his lab, which has paved the way for my present research contributions. Dr. Park is an international leader in GU oncology who saw my potential when we met at an international oncology conference and challenged me to reach that next step. His mentorship has been invaluable for my career growth, and I'm very grateful for his support. Additionally, Dr. Park is a passionate patient advocate whose warm demeanor and ability to connect with patients is something that I aspire to replicate in my future practice. Dr. Montero is an international leader in breast cancer who has been a stalwart mentor and an individual who empowers his students to achieve success. It was an honor to work with him in the clinic, learn from his great example and patient care, and now continue to work with him on research projects. Doctors Lyman and Kuder, I think of them as one of the best oncology power couples who continue to propel clinical research to new heights. It was an honor to be mentored by them on recent publication, and I'm looking forward to continuing to grow under their mentorship. Dr. Rodriguez, I'm inspired by her devotion to invest in the next generation of aspiring oncologists at all stages of their education. I'm very blessed that she takes the time to check up on me, give me pointed feedback, and truly set me up for success. Additionally, it's a pleasure to follow her work and learn about novel innovations in thoracic oncology. Additionally, there are several individuals who I look up to. Dr. Lopes is an international global leader in thoracic oncology who contributed to one of the largest standalone trials of pembrolizumab presented at the 2018 ASCO annual meeting plenary session with treatment guideline changing implication. Dr. Lopes is a strong patient advocate, devoted mentor who takes time for those who reach out to him, and is a warm physician. He is also an immigrant who worked assiduously, transformed medical care, and became a global leader who inspires those who have the pleasure of interacting with him. Dr. Galski and Dr. O are two international leaders in GU oncology who have contributed to new treatment guidelines of care. They have elevated this field to new heights from a research and clinical standpoint. They are both passionate mentors who inspire those with whom they interact and are invested in the growth and success of their mentees. And of course, Dr. Robert Peter Gale. He's an oncologist and cancer immunologist and an international authority in leukemia, bone marrow disorders, and the health effects of radiation. He has helped to define graft versus host disease, immunological aspects of transplantation in humans, and of course, coordinated medical efforts following 4 nuclear accidents, including Chernobyl. He's one of oncology's most prominent researchers, physicians, and experts. I greatly enjoyed his books about Chernobyl and hope to meet him one day.
And Dr. Robert Peter Gale, the last person that you mentioned, he really is a fascinating individual. In fact, our next podcast episode, if you are listening to this, you have to listen to this next episode coming up because it is an unreal. He was there in the Soviet Union. They asked him during the height, I'm talking when the United States and the Soviet Union were like, it was bad. Yet they came and asked him, an American, will you please come and take a look at what's going on here at Chernobyl? That just shows to you like the level of like respect that they had for this man. People ask me like, you know, Jake, how did you get involved with this and the mission and what you guys do in promoting research and publication? And the funny thing is it's because at 1 o'clock in the morning, you messaged me because, of course, doctors don't sleep. I'm convinced of that. And you were reaching out to me. You said, Jake, you know, there's a really great potential in the podcast. I'm with this team. We're doing fantastic stuff to promote publication research. We have these great individuals like Dr. Bruce Chasen. We got, and now we got Dr. Robert Peter Gale. I mean, real pioneers in the forefront of everything. And I said, wow, that's fantastic. And you should be a part of this podcast and a part of this team and really trying to get everybody to come together to push this initiative. And I immediately I was hooked. I said, hey, I didn't even need to hear anything else. but I never actually asked you, why did you join IJCR and the potential that you see in the journal, in the organization, and in its mission?
So once again, Jake, I apologize for messaging you at the wee hours of the night, but IJCR Central needed a person with your level of talent. I had a late night conversation with Dr. Nicholas, given our respective time differences, and then I began thinking, who would be the best individual for this role? You were at the top of the list, and I'm happy that you were equally inspired and passionate about the role and IJCR's mission.
Oh, I'm honored. Honestly, I am. Thank you.
Right, and especially now we get to work together and inspire the next generation. As you know, I have a passion for helping and educating others. Earlier this year, when the editors from IJCR Central reached out to me, I became intrigued. The more that I learned about the journal, the more that I saw that its mission aligned with my passions and desire to give back. Thus, I joined IJCR to train the next generation of medical students, especially those from redeveloping countries, so that they too can achieve scholarly success. Aside from becoming a section editor, I'm grateful to have had the support of Dr. Nicholas and the rest of IJCR Central to launch a webinar series called Pioneers in Medicine, featuring presentations by international medical leaders speaking about their respective fields. Our first speaker, as you had stated a few minutes ago, was Dr. Bruce Chasen, one of lymphoma's great pioneers. We had a great international turnout for that event that has only continued to grow in our subsequent events. I'm fortunate to have a passionate, dedicated, and hardworking team to make these events a reality. I'm also very passionate about mentorship, and that's another area in which I'm very active with IJCR. We want to educate students across the world about the art of research and arm them with the necessary skills and knowledge to be future leaders in medicine. Thus, I'm honored to have contributed to the development of our course and be an educator in it as well. They say great success is achieved in helping others succeed and grow. I'm fortunate to have an opportunity to do this with IJCR Central.
You know, Jan, I think that's fantastic that you want to mentor people, that you want to be able to be a part of promoting that research and publication. And that's the same thing. That's the same thing that I felt too. And we're like kindred in that way. It's a kindred spirit. And everybody that's been on that team at IJCR, they all feel the same way. And with that, I just want to thank you again for your time here on the podcast, for everything that you do and for what you've been doing right now with COVID right there in New York City. Although we've kind of seemed to have gotten out of the thick of it, knock on wood, we're still going through this together, the country, the entire global initiative. And so Dr. Jan Laifman, from a Chernobyl survivor to now tackling COVID with the great healthcare professionals that we have all around the world. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's truly an honor and a pleasure. And if I can give back, that's all I want to do. I want to prevent another catastrophe from occurring under my watch.
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more, please subscribe to wherever you'd like to hear podcasts. Until then, be curious and be kind.